streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. President Trump signs new military executive orders reinstating service members who refuse the COVID vaccine and allowing the Pentagon to determine a policy on transgender service members. CBS's Olivia Rinaldi.
It's not a blanket ban like we saw during the first administration, but what this one does is reevaluate readiness, armed forces readiness, and whether or not transgender persons in the military serving impacts that readiness.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement reports nearly 2,300 arrests of undocumented immigrants since Thursday, almost 1,000 of them yesterday across major U.S. cities. President Trump responding.
We've also deployed troops to the border, and for the first time in history, we're locating and loading illegal aliens into military aircraft and flying them back to the places from which they came.
Reporter Chris Fox in Texas.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott in a statement says he deployed hundreds of troops from the Texas Tactical Border Force to work side by side with U.S. Border Patrol agents in the deportation effort. El Paso Congressman Tony Gonzalez, a Republican, praising President Trump for using the military.
These convicted criminal aliens need to go home.
Over the weekend, pro-migrant protesters took to the streets in Austin, San Antonio, Dallas, and Fort Worth. Chris Fox for CBS News, Austin.
A CDC official says all agency staff who work with the World Health Organization must immediately stop their collaborations. WSB's Sabrina Cupid.
This comes at a time when health authorities from around the world are monitoring bird flu as we have outbreaks in the U.S., including here in Georgia. President Trump last week issued an executive order to begin the process of withdrawing from the World Health Organization. That would require, though, approval from Congress.
A frenzy over an artificial intelligence chatbot made by Chinese tech startup DeepSeek upended stock markets today. CBS's Margaret Brennan.
This technological leap made by China's DeepSeek using inferior computer chips at a cost 20 to 30 times less than leading American firms really got the attention of CEOs and investors that I've spoken with today who think this could drive more urgency among companies to innovate.
The tech-heavy Nasdaq plunged over 612 points. 80 years ago today, the Auschwitz concentration camp was liberated. World leaders and survivors gathered for a remembrance ceremony near what was a gas chamber where an 86-year-old survivor spoke of watching women in rags with no shoes walking in the snow to walk to the gas chamber to die. The American Library Association announces Percival Everett's James is the winner of this year's Carnegie Medal for Excellence in Fiction, which includes a $5,000 cash award. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
The Bills lose in Kansas City. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NFL, the Buffalo Bills lost the AFC Championship game to the Chiefs, 32-29. The Bills had the lead 10-7 in the second quarter, despite losing defensive back Christian Benford after he was carted off the field with another concussion. Bills head coach Sean McDermott.
You know, losing CB hurt us early there. You know, had a chance to convert a fourth down there, fourth and short, and then another fourth down late in the game there. It looked like we had a chance to catch it. Didn't work out that way.
The Chiefs are headed to their third consecutive Super Bowl. Head coach Andy Reid.
I'm proud of our guys battling. I mean, Pat Mahomes was phenomenal. You know, Travis Kelce, their leadership, Chris Jones, they didn't waver at all, and they know when to have fun, but they also know when to bear down.
The Chiefs will take on the Eagles, who beat Washington 55-23. NBA, the Bucks are in Utah tonight to play the Jazz. College basketball, the Badgers with a blowout win at home over Nebraska, 83-55. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. There are all kinds of benefits to having a younger host of Wheel of Fortune, especially when it comes to explaining internet slang to your letter-turning co-host, Vanna White. Vanna White posted a picture of her and her son cooking together on social media, which brought her son lots of attention, with people referring to the picture as a thirst trap. Not judging, because I had to Google it myself, but White said she had no idea what that was, but luckily, her young whippersnapper 50-year-old co-host, Ryan Seacrest, set everyone straight. Say what you want about Jennifer Lopez, but she is a showbiz juggernaut. The pop icon actress, who has a tendency to make headlines for all the wrong reason, just righted the ship with a standing ovation after a screening of her new film at the Sundance Film Festival. Lopez stars in the second film adaptation of the novel Kiss of the Spider-Woman. Jenny from the Block says this old-fashioned musical version of the film is one she's always wanted to make, and that witnessing a standing ovation actually made her dream come true. How can that awful Ben Affleck not love her? For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight, to low in the upper teens to around 20. For tomorrow, mostly cloudy, maybe an early flurry with some sunshine for the afternoon. High temps into the mid-30s. And mostly sunny for Wednesday. Highs, low 30s.
It's 28 degrees right now.
Pat Kreitlow.
Tuesday, we'll get our regular check-in with dairy farmer Hans Breitenmoser, who follows politics that impacts Wisconsin agriculture, and things are looking rough.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Monday. My name is Maggie Dawn, host of this, The Maggie Dawn Show, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Every Monday at 3 p.m., I am joined by a terrific guest from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Today, I'm really excited to be joined by Miss Shannon Baker Brandstetter. She is the Senior Director of Domestic Climate and Energy Policy. Welcome to the show, Shannon. It's great to have you.
Thanks so much for having me, Maggie. Great to be here.
Donald Trump, during the first week of his presidency, took a number of actions that many believe will set the United States back quite a bit as it comes to it when it comes to addressing climate change. And at the outset, Shannon, I wanted to ask you a baseline question, because it seems to me that these issues are presented as sort of a false choice, which is, one is drill, baby, drill, energy independence, affordable energy. You know, you're not going to go broke at the pump, or everything's going to cost five times what it does today. You can't buy the car that you want, and we're never going to be able to pump gas into our vehicles ever again. And that's not the choice that America or the world faces, is it?
Absolutely not. I'd say it's an even different choice, but we can choose to invest in clean energy and climate solutions and have a livable environment and affordable housing and affordable insurance. Or we can choose to continue to handing money to fossil fuel companies and have bigger climate-related disasters and less money in our pockets. I think that there are lots of contradictions in the executive orders that have come out this week, for sure.
And he framed this as trying to address the energy emergency in the United States. Is there an energy emergency in the United States? Is there an energy emergency or shortage worldwide? Like, what is he exactly talking about? How do we get our heads around this?
There is a climate emergency, and I think the only energy emergency we're facing now is that electricity prices are going to be going up because of AI data centers, crypto data centers, et cetera. So I think that the emergency is really not based on what regular Americans need and are facing. I think his emergency that we need to pump more oil, give more giveaways to natural gas companies. That's really not a solution that any of us are looking for.
And that is such an important point, Shannon. Let's just stick there for a minute. And that is, the United States produced more oil during the Biden administration, created more energy than it did during the Trump administration. There was no quote unquote EV mandate. There were goals and targets that Joe Biden had articulated. But I think the thing that trips people up most is that regular consumers, middle class families, are not the biggest consumers of energy. We sort of, are the tail that's getting wagged by the dog, right? We're not the major biggest consumers of energy. And as we see AI and especially crypto grow, the amount of energy as well as cooling systems and water for these data centers and these major processing centers is exploding. Certainly the announcement today from China is major. We're watching tech stocks stumble all day long. So I think it's important for people to understand what consumers require, middle class families require, versus what industries require, and who really is benefiting by the Donald Trump set of policies. So thank you for making that clear, Shannon. I wanted to ask you about Donald Trump's withdrawal from the Paris Climate Accords. If I recall correctly, there are only three other countries in the world that are not part of the climate accords from Paris. And those three countries are Iran, Libya, and Yemen. Seems odd company for the United States to be with.
Yes, definitely not the typical company that we'd like to share on an international agreement or disagreement in this case. I think that while there are lots of things that U.S. companies and U.S. nonprofits and NGOs will continue to do, this is definitely a setback on the U.S. leadership in the world. It sends the wrong signal and frankly cedes a lot of leadership to China and other countries that are still going to move forward. So I think that the writing is on the wall of moving to clean energy. It's a matter of how much is the U.S. going to lead versus get behind.
The other thing I wanted to talk about is, to me, a fascinating fact about the Paris Climate Accords and much of this discussion of cleaner energy is that oil companies and big energy, as you would have it, support these initiatives in part because they want to see consistent regulatory systems, that it is very dislocating, more so for smaller businesses, but also for mega corporations like Exxon, et cetera, when the regulatory structures and our approach to these fundamental generational public policy issues seems to oscillate 180 degrees depending on who's in the White House, and therefore the United States shirking its global leadership role, leading to more fracturing of the regulatory systems on a worldwide basis. Is this a fair observation, Shannon? And how should regular people translate that regulatory chaos into their, why does that matter to them?
Yeah, no, I think that you're absolutely right. I think that businesses do thrive in a more predictable environment, and people want to see stability in prices and what's available on the store shelves, on their electricity prices. And when we see companies and corporations that can plan and predict, then that does help lower costs for everyone. I think on the climate agreements, while, yes, there are some gas and oil companies that were supportive, there were plenty that were not as well around the world. And we do see their presence at the climate summits that happen every year. Mm-hmm. And so that influence is really negative, I think, and does stymie a lot of progress. So while it's a mixed bag, I think, on the fossil fuel industry of how supportive they are of regulations, I think, as you mentioned, it is the smaller companies and also just the smaller players. Automakers, yes, are big players, but not compared to oil companies. And so they definitely feel a lot of the disruption with the back and forth of regulations. You mentioned electric vehicles, for example, and manufacturers, the major automakers, were on track to continue their investments in electric vehicles because they are becoming more and more affordable, they're becoming better and better, and that is what is being increasingly bought around the world. So if domestic automakers want to have a strong export market, they need to really speed up on electric vehicles. And so the incentives that the Biden administration put in place to help make them more affordable are so important for domestic manufacturing, domestic jobs, as well as domestic prices for consumers.
There's so much here to unpack. And one of the things that, as we talk about, like, where does big oil, where do these energy companies sit in terms of these issues? There's no light switch here. Pardon the use of an energy pun to make my point. Nobody's moving from oil and gas and into clean energy or cleaner energy overnight. It simply doesn't work that way. Our infrastructure isn't ready to do that anyways. And so looking at how oil and gas and energy companies react to this is always fascinating. Like, what exactly is their motivation? Oh, if we start moving towards cleaner energy and we're producing less oil and gas, does that drive the price of oil and gas up to their benefit? So I think it's always beneficial for people to think a few steps ahead, right? And to not just take where we sit today as, well, it, of course, it has to be this way into perpetuity in the future, or we have to change this immediately tomorrow, because it simply won't work like that in this space for a whole gamut of reasons. When we talk about EV and cleaner energy, can you tell folks why those are some of the fastest growing industries, not just here in the United States, but worldwide, and why it's so important for the United States to lead?
With both EVs and renewable energy, there are not the regular maintenance costs and the operating costs, the fuel costs, they're all much, much lower compared to fossil fuels. And so once you install a solar array, or once you install a wind farm, they really require very little maintenance, and you have free it's renewable energy. And so I think that is really fantastic for, you know, consumers, for buyers of energy, as well as for the environment. And so with fossil fuels, though, we do see an entrenched industry that has a certain way of doing business and a lot of capital to throw around. And so I think a few years ago, you had some of the major oil companies announcing big energy efficiency and big renewable investments. And then they've really pared them back in the last few years, because one of the great things about renewable energy and the electric vehicle market too, is that it doesn't really favor just one or two players. There are lots of companies in the space, which makes it truly competitive, which is what I thought the capitalist model wanted, was competition. But apparently,
except when they don't, right?
Except when they don't. Apparently not when it comes to oil and gas. Then we want a monopoly.
Folks, that is Shannon Baker Brandstetter. She is the Senior Director of Climate and Energy Policy for the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Our conversation is going to continue after these brief messages, talking about what can Wisconsin families expect at the pump as we move forward in Trump 2.0. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, where we're all about real news and great conversation. We've got plenty of it coming up. More with Shannon. I've got Dom Salvia joining me at 3:30. He's got that fantastic show that follows mine every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. We're going to talk a little bit about Davos and crypto and the billionaire bros and the tech bros and the tax code and all of that good stuff, all coming up at 3:30. But we got more with Shannon from the Center for American Progress after these brief messages right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You know that tune. You're a star. You know stuff. Why not win stuff? Maybe it's stuff about TV or movies, but still, you shine at useless information. And WFHR and Culver's want to reward you.
Welcome back.
Join the Morning Show Fridays for a chance to win one value basket and a kid's meal. Be our next superstar with Culver's Star of the Day every Friday at 97.5 FM WFHR.
The Morning Show on WFHR. It's serious comedy.
Blue Monday has been a thing ever since a British psychologist came up with it 20 years ago.
Today is a day to rewrite the lyrics to Blue Christmas.
Yes, yes, yes.
I'll have a blue Monday when it's cold.
Nice, nice. That is my new favorite thing.
Yes.
Right there. That was awesome.
See you in the bumpers.
Weekdays from 8 to 10, right here on Locally Grown Radio.
Max Inc. on Civic Media, live in the lair with Kaylin Cole.
Have you ever walked away from a karaoke performance thinking, yeah, that was a lot better than the original person?
Oh my gosh, I don't know if I should admit that or not.
I think you should. Because now I know, now we know there's a song.
Jimmy's talking on it now.
I know. Oh, you're going to get me in trouble, Jimmy.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at maxincradio.com and listen live on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
Medicaid and CHIP offer free or low-cost health coverage for children and teens. Hospital and doctor visits, prescriptions, shots, and more are covered. That's peace of mind for parents if a child is sick or gets injured. And parents may now be eligible for Medicaid too, even if they've applied in the past. Enrollment is always open. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 1-877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Locally Grown Radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We hope the sun stays shining in the sky. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I got a special guest with me this half hour and another favorite joining me at the bottom of the hour. Dom Salvia coming up at 3:30. We're going to talk about Davos and Trump's tax cuts for billionaires while leaving the middle class behind, all coming up in the 3:30 block. Right now, I am joined by my special guest, who joins me, not this particular guest, but someone from the Center for American Progress Action Fund, every Monday at 3 p.m. Today, very happy to be joined by Shannon Baker Brandstetter, Senior Director of Domestic Climate and Energy Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. One of the things that bugs me about the way that Donald Trump has framed this discussion around having affordable energy sources so that middle class families aren't going broke at the pump or to heat their homes, as well as trying to pursue sensible climate policy so that our grandkids can still enjoy the outdoors and we're not under some veil of constant, you know, ozone and or wildfires as all of these are burning in California, is this sort of ridiculously kindergarten-ish approach of Donald Trump, right? This oversimplification, like, oh, drill, baby, drill, and everything's going to be just fine. Why is that such a false promise to Wisconsinites and middle-class families? Why is that not the way to address this quite generational and existential question for us all?
Well, Maggie, as we were saying earlier, the oil and gas industry has been pumping out more oil and gas in the U.S. now than any time in American history. And we're the biggest producer in the world right now. So the idea that there needs to be more domestic drilling will somehow magically lower prices is just, like you said, just really basic and wrong thinking. It is a matter of supply and demand, and oil and gas are sold on a global market. And so one of the great things about electric vehicles is that even if you don't own one, the more that are in the U.S., the lower demand there is for gasoline, which means that gasoline prices have downward pressure and will go lower. So if we're decreasing the number of EVs on the road and that will be sold and made in the future, then we are actually increasing gasoline prices for Americans. So it's really just turned on its head, the idea that we need more gasoline will magically lower our prices. We need to lower demand and have alternatives so that we're not just stuck with oil forever.
Well, and again, that seems to be the false picture of a lack of choice that Donald Trump was trying to paint, right? That, oh, you won't be able to buy the car that you want. When in reality, that's exactly what he's doing for those that want to move to cleaner automobiles or vehicles. He's effectively removing the incentives that would make that affordable and possible for middle class families, as well as effectively putting in place an artificial price bump for that will only benefit oil and gas companies to the detriment of middle class Americans. Frustrating indeed. One other area that I wanted to ask you about, Shannon, before we run out of time this afternoon, is this concept of environmental justice. And I think people have heard this term before, but if you could help us get our heads around what that means and why it's so important in a place like Wisconsin, but also in communities like Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee, Dane County, anybody that's got a community that is on the lake or on a major river, you know, like Lake Michigan, the Mississippi River, why these things are so critical for us to consider moving forward.
Sure. Well, I think to explain it just at a basic level, environmental justice communities are communities that have an overburden of pollution, whether that's historical or current. It's most all of us want clean air and clean water, and the Clean Air Act and Clean Water Act have made huge progress in that for most Americans. But there are still communities that are at the front lines of polluting facilities, whether that's water, soil, air, and some of the facilities, whether it's, you know, left from before or are currently spitting out pollution that causes cancer, that causes asthma and heart conditions. And so we really need as a society to recognize that the people bearing the burden of that are not, it's not acceptable. It's a moral imperative that everyone does have access to clean air and clean water. So one of the things that the Biden administration did was direct resources to these underserved communities that have been bearing an unfair burden of pollution for decades. And so there's lots of money to clean up facilities and to help facilities still stay in business, but be cleaner. It's not just about shutting everything down. It's about having both our health and jobs and being competitive.
I often like to remind people that billionaires never have to worry about clean air, water, or getting good food that's free of cancer-causing chemicals or those things, because they will always be able to buy that at whatever price it may be. It is regular people that pay the highest price, and certainly communities and folks that have been historically discriminated against who bear the utmost cost. It's interesting, as I look forward, look at a future-oriented viewpoint, I see communities that are bordering bodies of water, like many communities in Wisconsin, as now becoming part of that environmental justice umbrella, because to the extent that we are working class communities and our communities, our infrastructure is being eroded at a speed that is far outstripping what it would have been had there been more meaningful a regulation of the energy companies. Taxpayers are going to be subsidizing these industries as we rush to try to improve our roads and bridges and infrastructure from the accelerated degradation of all of those things wrought by big energy. Shannon, my most heartfelt thanks to you. I look forward to continuing this discussion as the Trump administration moves on and bringing this information to Wisconsinites and folks everywhere. My special guest this half hour has been Shannon Baker-Brandstetter, Senior Director of Domestic Climate and Energy Policy for the Center for American Progress Action Fund. You can follow Shannon on Twitter at @ShannonBB8 for more insights. I know I'll be doing that. Shannon, thanks so much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Maggie. Great to be with you.
Folks, coming up next, we're going to have Dom Salvia joining us for a little bit of In Case You Missed It. He's got that fine program that follows mine every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. And don't forget, tomorrow, starting at 2 p.m., I'm going to be interviewing former Capitol Police Officer Harry Dunn. He's got some thoughts about Brad Schimmel cozying up to the January 6th insurrectionists, as well as Donald Trump's anti-American pardon of those that beat cops that day. He was there on January 6th. He was in the Capitol, and he's going to be telling us all about his thoughts, including his thoughts on this upcoming Supreme Court race here in Wisconsin. So put that on the calendar. We're going to take care of a little bit of business, and I'll be right back with you. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
CBS News Brief. President Trump signs military executive orders that include reinstating service members who refuse the COVID vaccine and allowing the Pentagon to determine a policy on transgender service members.
To ensure that we have the most lethal fighting force in the world, we will get transgender ideology the hell out of our military. It's going to be gone.
Trump's crackdown on migrants in the U.S. illegally led to nearly 1,000 arrests yesterday. CBS's Lilia Luciano.
The number of people arrested by ICE and other collaborating agencies through the weekend was vast, especially on Sunday. It tripled the average daily arrests under the Biden administration.
80 years ago, the Auschwitz concentration camp was liberated. During a ceremony, survivor Tova Friedman recalls women being taken to a gas chamber.
They were covered with rags, and some of them didn't even have any shoes and were walking barefoot in the snow.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
The Bills lose in Kansas City. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NFL, the Buffalo Bills lost the AFC Championship game to the Chiefs 32-29. The Bills had the lead 10-7 in the second quarter, despite losing defensive back Christian Benford after he was carted off the field with another concussion. Bills head coach Sean McDermott.
You know, losing CB hurt us early there. We had a chance to convert a fourth down there, fourth and short. And then another fourth down late in the game there. It looked like we had a chance to catch it. Didn't work out that way.
The Chiefs are headed to their third consecutive Super Bowl. Head coach Andy Reid.
I'm proud of our guys battling. I mean, Pat Mahomes was phenomenal. You know, Travis Kelce, their leadership, Chris Jones. They didn't waver at all, and they know when to have fun, but they also know when to bear down.
The Chiefs will take on the Eagles, who beat Washington 55-23. NBA, the Bucks are in Utah tonight to play the Jazz. College basketball, the Badgers with a blowout win at home over Nebraska, 83-55. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Well, the 2025 Super Bowl is set. It will be the Philadelphia Eagles taking on the Kansas City Chiefs, which most people don't seem that excited about. The Chiefs will be trying to three-peat, something that has never been achieved in the Super Bowl era. The Philadelphia Eagles scored the most points in an NFL championship conference game ever, but unfortunately, they can't save some of those points for the Super Bowl. Here's hoping for a good game. Timothée Chalamet plays Bob Dylan in A Complete Unknown. The Oscar-nominated actor came under fire for a line he ad-libbed while playing an exercise class instructor, making a joke about recently deceased President Jimmy Carter. The joke was mostly met with cringe, but people who defended him countered it was just a joke. So to summarize, Chalamet, who plays a Nobel Prize winner in a movie, made fun of a Nobel Peace Prize winner on Saturday Night Live. How noble? For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Other than a few flurries in the overnight, we'll see partly cloudy skies, lows in the mid-teens, northwest winds, breezy. On Tuesday, we'll see better chances of snow. Any accumulation, though, will be nothing more than a dusting with highs in the upper 30s. Right now, it's 28.
The Badgers.
Seeds Max fakes the three, takes the three. Left side, yes, sir.
Flee.
Pivots, fades, flips. Good again. Just outside the left elbow.
Here.
Goes up, got it. With the right hand, it counts and a foul.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Brought to you by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric, and Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM WFHR, streaming live on the Civic Media app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Maggie Dawn.
At the top of the show, I'll be joined by former Capitol Police Officer Harry Dunn explaining why Brad Schimmel should never be a Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Boom, 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 boom.
I got some ABCs for y'all, and Dom and I are going to bring them to you. The ABCs of why Trump is going to end up screwing the middle class. Not end up, it's been the plan all along. We're going to break it down for you, but let's start with some of those lighter topics. In case you missed it, I got my little buddy Dom Salvi, who's got that fabulous program that comes after mine every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you're just joining us, my name's Maggie Dawn, host of this, The Maggie Dawn Show, from 2 to 4 p.m. every weekday. Welcome back to the show, Dom. How you doing?
Hey, Maggie, I am great. Thank you once again for having me. It is a pleasure to be with you always.
Yes, I believe last week you and I gave a little like test drive to some ABCs of the Trump administration, assault, battery, and corruption. This week, I'm going to add to those ABCs. But of course, your beloved Lions have been out of the running. Did you watch the Chiefs, Bills?
Yesterday, you did. You know, it's tough for me, especially in this kind of round. I generally try to root for the underdog. I'm a little guy, root for the underdog. So I was hoping, come on, Bills. Yeah, I remember Bills back in the 90s, and they never made it. You know,
just so sad.
And heartbreaking for them. No commitment either way. It's good games. And of course, Washington beat my beloved Lions, and then they went on to lose. Lose pretty bad to the Eagles. So I'm kind of torn, Maggie. It'd be interesting to see KC do three. You know, it's never been done before.
Right.
But at the same time, to hell with KC. Fly, Eagles, fly. But then my Bears buddy roots for the Eagles so that I don't want them to win either. So I guess I'm just looking for some entertainment.
Damn you, Kuchka. It was weird going into this last round. I also was rooting for the Commanders, just kind of the Cinderella season for them. And the Bills. Yes, I remember the 90s. Every Bills fan. Like, have you ever been to Buffalo in the winter? They need something to cheer about. It's rough up there, man. But all that said, this is going to be an interesting Super Bowl. I love the feel of Philly fans, no matter what the sport is. They are diehard. I always feel like there's a little Milwaukee connection, a little similar vibe to Philly. And of course, the historic nature of the Chiefs going for number three in a row. It'll be an interesting Super Bowl. Maybe you and I will quaff an adult beverage or two, watch some commercials, and commentate that game for our own amusement. Folks, that's Dom Salvi. He's got the great show that follows mine every weekday on the Civic Media Talk Radio Network. But let's get down to the ABCs of Donald Trump's business. The World Economic Forum, a.k.a. Davos, has been going on. It is a little bit different this year than it has been in the past. In the past, it was all about, let's talk about alternative energies, environmental and social justice, all kinds of ethical investing, all of these things. This year, bit of that is gone. And I thought I would break it down with the ABCs so as to not bury the lead too much. The first A of the Trump administration is avarice, the fancy thesaurus word for greed, which it is. It's always awkward to me. I've always thought Davos is a little weird because you've got a million private jets flying in. It's the billionaire set. Huge investment companies. You've got the Saudi sovereign wealth fund, which now has paid off Jared Kushner. All of this goes on. And as I was getting ready to talk about this, I stumbled across what was a really big deal a couple of years ago. There was a Dutch historian that showed up at Davos and he broke down the, hypocrisy of the whole event pretty clearly. Corey, this is going to be cut 2A, if we can take a listen.
Senator Crapo, thank you for this.
I actually called up the wrong cut, Corey. That's my bad, my friend. It's good when I get the right sound at the right time, Dom. A girl can dream. This is actually, this is Dutch historian Ruder Bregman. This is going to be cut 3A. Hang in there with me through this, Dom. It is worth a wait.
This is my first time at Davos, and I find it quite a bewildering experience, to be honest. 1,500 private jets have flown in here to hear Sir David Attenborough speak about, how we're wrecking the planet. And I mean, I hear people talk in the language of participation and justice and equality and transparency. But then, I mean, almost no one raises the real issue of tax avoidance, right? And of the rich just not paying their fair share. I mean, it feels like I'm at a firefighters conference and no one's allowed to speak about water, right? there was only one panel, actually.
Well, we've had two. You're the second of our panelists.
There was only one panel.
Let's go there.
One panel hidden away in the media center that was actually about tax avoidance. Yeah. I was one of the 15 participants. So something needs to change here. I mean, ten years ago, the World Economic Forum asked the question, what must industry do to prevent a broad social backlash? The answer is very simple. Just stop talking about philanthropy and start talking about taxes. Mm-hmm. Taxes, taxes. We need to... Mm-hmm. I mean, just 2 days ago, there was a billionaire in here. What's his name? Michael Dell. And he asked the question, like, name me one country where a top marginal tax rate of 70% has actually worked. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm a historian. The United States, that's where it has actually worked. In the 1950s, during Republican President Eisenhower, you know, the war veteran, the top marginal tax rate in the U.S. was 91% mm-hmm. for people like Michael Dell. You know, the top estate tax for people like Michael Dell was more than 70%. I mean, this is not rocket science. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can talk for a very long time about all these stupid philanthropy schemes. We can invite Bono once more, but come on, we got to be talking about taxes. Yeah, exactly. That's it. Taxes, taxes, taxes. All the rest is bullshit, in my opinion.
Yeah. So there's that, right? And folks, if you're taking notes at home, this was January 25th, 2019 at Davos, as it was occurring back then. Here is what I think is just incredible. Scott Bessent, okay, Donald Trump's appointee to be the Treasury Secretary, okay? He is a Wall Street billionaire because we got the billionaire cabinet. He's going to face his vote for his confirmation, right? But he has already said the tax cuts for the ultra wealthy are, quote, the single most important economic issue facing the United States today. You would hope he would be saying that we need more taxes, less tax cuts for the billionaires. But no, that's not what he means. He means we need more tax cuts for billionaires, doing the exact opposite thing that the historian was just pointing out is what helped bring about the middle class and help sustain it in the post-World War II period. This is from Bessent's confirmation hearings. This is actually cut to a Corey. Give her a rip.
Senator Crapo, thank you for this, and thank you for the meetings over the past few weeks. I've enjoyed working with your staff. And this is the single most important economic issue of the day. This is pass-fail. That if we do not fix these tax cuts, if we do not renew and extend, then we will be facing an economic calamity.
I don't believe it.
Like, the math doesn't even work. Your argument, Mr. Billionaire, is that if we don't give more tax cuts to you and other billionaires, that's going to create an economic calamity?
Yeah, of course. Haven't you read Atlas Shrugged, Maggie Dawn? And may I also submit that this is the same guy, when asked about raising the federal minimum wage of $7.25, he thought that didn't need to happen.
No, of course he wouldn't. Why would I want to pay people a living wage? So A is for Avenue, B is for billionaires and Scott Bessent, because that's what they're all about. And C, of course, is for the corruption. C is always, whenever I'm doing the alphabets or the alphabet of Trump's administration, C will always be for the corruption. And here's the evidence of that. One of Trump's late actions on Friday, and they always do the stuff on Friday that they don't want anybody to remember, right, was to fire all of the independent inspectors general. Folks, if you don't know what an inspector general is, it's like the auditor of your nightmares. Think IRS on like to the exponential level. The inspectors general are basically walled off independent offices within every single executive branch department. They are the people and the teams of people that include lawyers and auditors who inspect, right, look for fraud, waste, and abuse in government. They're whom whistleblowers send their whistleblower complaints to. He fired all of them. And I'm hearing today that in the Trump administration, there is some new weird litmus testing going on. You have to effectively explain when you had your like MAGA awakening as part of your application process. Wow. I kid you not. I also hear that they're setting up like private email servers to email federal employees with. Scott Walker, but on the federal scale. I just don't. What is going on? Apparently, they're doing this to generate some sort of email list of employees to send out their reduction in force notices. I don't like, why do you need a separate email server for it? I don't get it. Why would you shut down the inspector general's unbelievable graft and grift? Here's the quote from one of Heather Cox Richardson, another historian's thinking about this. She refers to Walter Schaub, who is the former head of the Office of Government Ethics under Trump in his first administration. So this is the guy that Trump picked during his first administration to run the Office of Government Ethics. Okay. And this guy left after criticizing Trump's unwillingness to divest from his family's companies, which, of course, he's not doing this time around either. Here's what he wrote to CNN after watching the first few days of the Trump administration 2.0. Quote, America voted for corruption, and that's what Trump is delivering. Trump's corruption and naked profiteering is so open, extreme, and pervasive this time around that to comment on any one aspect of it would be to lose the forest or the trees. The very idea of government ethics is now a smoldering crater. Dom, whether we're talking about Elon Musk's $15 billion in contracts, yet he's running the Office of Government Efficiency, Jared Kushner's, you know, couple $100 million deal with the Saudi sovereign wealth fund. I mean, which is your favorite totally corrupt part of the Trump administration?
I mean, there's just so many to choose from. I think the Jared Kushner $2 billion payoff after they waxed the Washington Post contributor is still one of my favorites. As a lot of these are still coming to light. Here's the thing. Yes, absolutely. The observation by the historian is spot on. The corruption is blatant. It's there. Here we are, and what are you going to do about it? Well, what you can do is whatever is allowed for by law. My understanding, the firing of the inspectors general, not lawful. They have to give a, 30-day notice to Congress. He did not do that. They have to provide a reason for that. He did not do that. So these things will be litigated. So if we can gum it up, slow it down, you know, impede it anyway every time, that's the best, I think, at this point we can hope for.
Well, the interesting thought that I had immediately about the IGs, right? And listen, I have dealt with government auditors before, and it is not the most pleasant of processes. but one of the things that bugs me is the resources that are going to have to be directed to try to defend that, right? It's sort of like, oh, and over here, here's the jangling keys while the bigger grift is going on in terms of Donald Trump's cryptocurrency, which some Chinese billionaire underwrote so that now if you buy his stupid crypto, you're basically writing a check to the president. I don't know. Does that count? Is that using your public position for personal gain? Who knows? When we come up, we've gone through A, the Everest, B, the billionaires, and for Scott Bessent, and C is always for the corruption in the Donald Trump administration, yeah. D, for the dumbness of Davos and Jamie Dimon. I'm going to break that one down for you with Dom Salvia. How many more D's can I squeeze in a sentence? All that and so much more coming up. How is what Jamie Dimon is saying going to hurt you and your family's pocketbook? Coming up next, right here on The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR. Have you made New Year's resolutions such as exercising more or learning a new skill? Why not add some financial resolutions? For starters, try to reduce your debt load. You'll improve your cash flow and have more to invest. See whether you can boost your pre-tax contributions to your traditional IRA and 401k. Once you're 50, you can even make catch-up contributions. If you have an education goal, consider investing in a tax-advantaged 529 education savings plan. Also, try to build an emergency fund containing up to 6 months' worth of living expenses, with the money kept in a liquid, low-risk account. Finally, even if you're relatively young, it's good to have your estate plans in order. And if you've already created these plans, you may want to review them, especially if you've had changes in your family situation involving marriage, divorce, or birth of children or grandchildren. You may not be able to tackle all these resolutions in 2025, but by addressing as many of them as possible, you can make progress towards your goals and set yourself on a positive course for the future. This is Clay Kanoki, your Edward Jones Financial Advisor at 715-421-0958. Member SIPC.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. The Army National Guard has taught me the value of showing respect to those I come in contact with each day. My service also allows me to be there for my community in ways others can't. I help my hometown recover after nature strikes. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my country and those I care about safe from threats. I also work with a network of professionals that help me succeed and accomplish the mission. Plus, the Army National Guard education benefits make getting a higher education a reality. Being an Army National Guard soldier makes living and serving in my community more rewarding every day. Learn how you too can live and serve part-time, close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Like taking candy from a baby. ABC.
Who else is like taking candy from a baby? It might be Donald Trump putting his hand into your pocket so that he can give his billionaire buddies an even bigger tax cut. Folks, my name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Every Monday at 3:30, I'm joined by my friend and yours, Dom Salvia, for a little bit of In Case You Missed It, which is basically a catch-all term for whatever Dom and I want to talk about that's hitting our windshield at the time. We've been doing this week's version of the ABCs of the Trump administration. So far, we've got avarice, B, billionaires, for billionaires like Scott Bessent, who's basically said, yeah, minimum wage at 7.25 is just fine. And you know what we need to lock up the U.S. economy is more tax cuts for billionaires, which is stupid and wrong. C, of course, is for the corruption, as evidenced by Donald Trump trying to fire all the inspectors general. His cryptocurrency, his wife's cryptocurrency, his son-in-law's grift with the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund. Oh, and this, in one of his executive orders last week, pulled out of international agreements that were targeting a minimum tax floor. Not just what it says in the books, but like the actual minimum effective tax floor for billionaires. It shouldn't be the case that Warren Buffett pays less than we do on a percentage basis in tax, Dom. That just seems right. Obscene would be a word. But I also wanted to get to the dumbness of Davos for D, as well as the dumbness of JP Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon. I'm going to take cut for B, Corey, in just a second. So giving you a little heads up there, my friend. Jamie Dimon said at Davos last week this about tariffs, which, you know, apparently news to me. I didn't think Trump ran on more inflation. But here's what Jamie Dimon said of Donald Trump's tariff proposals. If it's a little inflationary, hey, but it's good for national security, so be it. I mean, get over it. I'm not kidding. Jamie Dimon, if it's a little inflationary, get over it. Un-freaking-believable. Wow. What do you have to say about Jamie Dimon telling all of us just to get over it?
I think that kind of attitude is pervasive within the conservative and Republican and mega party. We heard similar things like that from Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson when it was to be known that women couldn't get abortions in the state of Wisconsin anymore. What did he say? Well, it'll be a little ugly, be a little messy for a while, but they can go to Illinois and get it done. Get over it. Essentially, it's get over it. And I find it extremely interesting that of all these executive orders and actions that are being done, certainly by Donald Trump and the executive branch, but even as the mega caucuses get together and try to figure out how they're going to pass the one big, beautiful bill, where's the effort to reduce the cost of eggs, right? Isn't the inflationary concern? Wasn't the economy? It's all about the economy, stupid. Isn't that why Donald Trump won? Well, where are those actions? We're not seeing any of that. And hell, with the games he was playing with Colombia, the COLO, Trump administration, the price of coffee's already going up. People are going to, our trading partners are going to hedge their bets ahead of time when they see things are going to get ugly. I mean, the worst thing you can do for the state of business is not have stability. And Donald Trump is the king of instability. So there's going to be that. And when it comes down to it, we talk about the billionaires and taxing them. Well, you know, we as citizens, as the American people, we can elect our representatives to submit and change the tax codes. We can do that. We can actually do that instead of, half of us sitting on our hands, not doing anything about it. The other one's thinking, well, maybe if I become a billionaire, I don't want to have that kind of tax rate. Now, granted, when those tax rates were at 70, 80, 90%, there were different things you could write off. It was a different environment back then. Not to say that we can't get there again.
Well, the thing that I find most consistently angering about this situation is that there is no economist worth their salt that will tell you if you care about U.S. debt or the deficit, or you care about funding Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid, that the pathway forward is to reduce our revenues even further by giving even bigger tax cuts to billionaires.
Oh, they're going to make it up. They're going to take that money and they're going to, put it in their pocket, and somehow, some way, that's going to churn through the economy, and therefore we'll get even more out of it. So if you cut it by 10%, we'll increase it by 15%. It's the logic that they would have you believe. But of course,
there is no logic. Money trickles up, not down, and every economist worth their salt have said that. Some pretty funny comments coming in on the text line. Hey guys, WRCE texter says, that's Trump's presidency in a nutshell. Ask not what your country can do for you, but what your country can do for me and my billionaire buddies.
Right.
And lest I forget, that my E for the day, we've done avarice, the billionaires, and Scott Bessent. We've done C for the corruption, D for the dumbness of Jamie Dimon and Davos, because, who cares about a little bit of inflation?
Get over it.
E, of course, for equality under the law and getting rid of whatever DEI meant to conservatives, because I guarantee you Pete Hegseth got that job purely on his job qualifications and merits, right? I mean, let's go through the list. Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, Pete Hegseth, RFK, Elon Musk, Stephen Miller. Yeah. It's not about equality, folks. It's about the Billionaire Boys Club. Folks, you've got Don Salvia coming up next right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My name is Maggie Dawn. Thanks for sticking with me. We got Officer Harry Dunn at the top of the show tomorrow. He is a former Capitol Police officer who is deeply offended, as we all should be, by Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice candidate Brad Schimmel's cozying up to the January 6th insurrectionists and pardoning the pardons for those that beat and injured cops on January 6th. Tomorrow at the top of the show. Don't miss it. Dom Salvia is coming up next. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Baby, there's nothing hard about love. Basically, it's as easy as pie. The hard part is living without love. Without your love, baby, I would die. 1, 2, 3.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, friend and colleague Maggie Dawn joining us at 10:33 to talk all things Wisconsin. We will wrap it up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. I hope you can join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
here at Boot Barn, our objective is to build the perfect boot. We do take our time ensuring that every step is done correctly. For a boot to last you for a lifetime, you've got to properly build the boots. Hand craftsmanship is, in my opinion, the only way you're going to achieve that. We handcraft our boots. 160 people take a boot from start to finish. We have skilled artisans at every stage of the game. We've been handcrafting boots since the beginning here at Boot Barn, and we'll continue to do so.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is Locally Grown Radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. President Trump praises Immigration and Customs Enforcement as it rounds up undocumented immigrants across the country. A significant number of detentions were made here in Chicago. CBS's Ian Lee says Trump administration officials have been on the ground overseeing the operation.
The governor came out saying that he supports ICE going after people who have criminal convictions, but he also said he's concerned that ICE is going to go after people who don't have criminal convictions and people who are holding down jobs. The mayor also came out saying that he wants migrants to know that they do have their constitutional rights.
President Trump's latest round of executive orders focus on the military. He has directed the Pentagon to determine a policy for transgender.